Our maniacs at the 101st Air Refueling Wing really do have some of the coolest stories around. I've talked about this before, but we really do. And one of the cool things about my job is I get to share those stories because public affairs are just that. We're story sharers. Storytellers. I've been able to talk with and interview people with a variety of experiences and stories to tell. I've had the privilege to talk to maniacs who responded to New York on 9/11. Talked to retirees who served out here during the Vietnam and Korean Wars. I've talked to a doctor who joined at age 55, and when he was down in tech school, he beat all the other cadre half his age at a push-up contest. I even talked to a CE troop who got to go to NASA camp and learn about space back before the Space Force was even a thing. I mean, seriously, who does that? I want to go to space camp. But a lot of these conversations and interviews are had with senior leaders, people who have been around the block. It's rare that I meet someone who's young and has a notch in their tool belt that not a lot of others even have, even amongst their own peers. Staff Sergeant Blaine Clark is a firefighter for the wing. He's also a hunter and a woodsman. He's been out west and trained on fighting wildfires. And recently, members from the local community and civilian organizations conducted a course that our wing firefighters took part in, covering a similar topic. Now, before I butcher the training specifics and what it entailed, let's talk to Sergeant Clark and hear what he has to say. Here he is.
I did the expanded zone around here. Makes it so much better because you can shoot as many does as you want to fill the freezer. You get an extra buck tag out of it. That's cool. The season's like September to middle of December, something
really?
Like that. Yeah.
That's bow?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. That's cool. I feel like it's a whole different ball game.
It is. It's weird. I got into tracking a lot the last like 2 years as well. Mm-hmm. And was able to get a buck this year tracking on snow, muzzleloader.
But wow.
Totally different animal than bow hunting.
So what was that? What did that entail? Like tracking? Is that like a howl blood?
Yeah, exactly.
Type deal? Yeah. That's cool.
So mine was kind of a little bit unconventional where it was like I saw a couple does in the middle of the road and it had just snowed the morning before. It was the first day of muzzleloader and I just backtracked their tracks like a mile in the woods, stumbled upon a 175 pound 10 pointer.
Wow.
And he dropped right in his tracks. It went.
What was he doing when you came on him?
He was just sniffing. He was just nose down following their tracks.
Wasn't even paying attention.
No, because he like bound, took like one bound into a skitter trail before I'd even seen him.
Yeah.
So I think I startled him and I turned around and he must have been curious and he stopped right there. It was like 35 yards.
Really?
It was that close. Yeah. So he was just nose down.
And this is like
following
the thick of the woods?
Or
like
I hunt it's kind of near Rangeley. And this was a spot, it was softwood that they'd cut probably 2 years ago, mm-hmm. would be my guess, that they were just tracking through.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's super cool. Yeah. I feel like that it kind of opens up a whole different can of worms when you're, you know, spotting and stalking a whitetail in our woods. Cause it's, you don't know how thick it's going to get.
Yeah.
You don't know how long it's going to take.
Right.
But listening to howl blood stuff is pretty cool. Cause like listening to him talk about the freshness of a track.
And yeah.
That's pretty cool.
There's a lot that goes into it.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. His podcast is neat too.
Yeah.
I like watching his videos, but yeah. Yeah. It's different. I mean, and the cool thing, the appealing thing to me about it is like the fact that, I don't know about you, but like if I sit too long, I don't care how many layers I have on, I get cold real quick.
Mm-hmm.
And like if you're moving around and walking, you know, you're good.
Yeah.
You know, you feel pretty good.
It's also mentally just way more engaging.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll sit in a tree stand as long as I want, but it's not as fun as going out and getting on a track.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. Good for you. Congrats. That's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how long you've been hunting for?
So I've been hunting since I was 10.
Yeah.
With my dad, but it didn't. I got, when COVID hit in high school, I had a bunch of free time. So I got pretty serious into bow hunting for a couple of years and then went away to the guard and was out west doing wildland stuff and didn't hunt for a couple of years. Didn't bow hunt for a couple of years. And when I came back here is kind of more when I got more serious in the tracking and bow hunting side of it. And I turkey hunted a lot more when I was in high school, but I haven't turkey hunted much the last couple of years.
Mm.
And I did draw a moose permit, or my dad drew a moose permit when I was like 12. So I was tagging along for that hunt as a sub-bermity, which was fun. We got a bull, but
that's awesome.
Haven't gotten another tag since.
So. Seriously.
Yeah.
Did you put one in for this year?
I did. Yeah. So we'll see. That's hopefully. Cool.
Do you primarily hunt down in Rangeley or?
Yeah, I know the guy with the camp out of there. Cool. So that's my favorite spot to go. But I mean, like when we were getting snow, I know another guy with a camp in Masardis. So like just up off Route 11, mm-hmm. south of Holton a little bit. Gone up there before. Wherever I can get in the woods.
Really. Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's your experience with ticks been so far?
This year, I mean, like I said, I haven't really been like turkey hunting much this year. But in the past, it was bad. And I'm originally from the Lewis and Auburn area. So a little bit further south of here. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you'd go out for a morning sit turkey hunting and it was like...
Just covered.
Crawling on them. Yeah. I've had ticks in places that you don't want ticks.
Yeah, they're gross. Yeah, they're gross. And they definitely seem like they're getting worse. More, you know, more and more.
For sure.
Yeah. It's there's only so much that like your permethrin clothing can do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's wild. And are you a fire specialist? Is that your technical?
Fire protection specialist is the technical term. Yep.
Okay. All right. And how long have you been with out here?
So about 4.5 years now on the guard side, and then I also work there full time for the last 2.5 years.
Okay. You like it?
Yeah. It's good. It's a good group of guys and good job. So I enjoy it.
It seems like it. It seems very close knit. Every time I do something with you guys or go down and interact with you guys, it always seems super close knit.
Yeah.
As I'm sure it is in most fire departments. Right. You know, even on the civilian side, I'm sure it is too. I used to be security forces, so we would interact every once in a while.
Yep.
You know, and very similar, you know, 24-hour ops and crews and flights and all that stuff. But
you definitely get to know the group of guys that you're with pretty well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. Yeah, that's awesome. So what was this event that you guys had recently?
So this last year weekend, we had our red card training, mm-hmm. which is all the certifications for basic wildland firefighter.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, we did that with the Maine Forest Rangers over Thursday, Friday.
Nice.
This training.
Why did you guys do that? What was the point?
So the point of that training was... it's something that we get a basic knowledge of through the fire school that we go through at the DoD Fire Academy, but not something that we have a lot of specialty in. Mm-hmm. And there's always forest fires and gives us more opportunities to get out and train and provide more resources. So that was kind of the reason that we got into it and scheduled it to be able to complete that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do you guys, is there a difference in like an equipment between the crews with the Forest Service that are equipped to fight, you know, forest fires versus what you guys have? Or is it pretty much the same stuff, or how's that work?
Yeah, so that's what we're actually working on that now is we have some basic wildland gear or gear that's geared towards wildland, for lack mm-hmm. of better words.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't have all the equipment that we would actually need to be able to go. There's potential like we could pair up with the forest rangers and be going out on like a 2-week roll. We don't have all the gear that we would necessarily need to do that. It's more designed for, you know, there's a wildland fire on the base. We can get a truck in there, get it out and mop it up and make sure that it's completely out. But as far as going on a 2-week roll, like how most wildland fire crews are structured, we don't really have all that equipment. So that's stuff that we're in the works of getting. We need just more hand tools, more PPE, more stuff along those lines.
Yeah, that's cool. I just picture like, and what very little I know about it, or what I've seen in videos or online, I can't picture you guys, driving your Air Force fire engine up in Baxter State Park.
Yeah, no, definitely a lot more physical fitness oriented.
Yeah,
you're gonna be hiking into places and carrying everything that you need on your back.
Yeah.
So.
I bet, and I'm sure the training. I bet that was part of the training too, right? So walk me through that a little bit. What were some of the things you guys covered?
Yeah. So recently, what we did was the first part is there was 5 online certifications that everybody had to get in order to kind of shorten up the training to be able to fit it into a drill weekend. So they did everybody did the S-130, S-190, L-180, which is just the basic firefighter operations, basic fire weather stuff, and then human factors in the wildfire service. And then the other two were both incident command system classes that we'd already taken through our initial training. So ICS 100, ICS 700, everybody got those all done. After that was completed on Thursday this week, the Maine Forest Rangers came up and they did basic pump operations because they have portable pumps that they can take into the woods with them in order to set up hose lines in the woods that we don't have. All of our pumps would just be on the truck. So we have a knowledge of how pumps work, but we messed around with those and learned how they use those and got a full understanding on that. After that, everybody did handline construction. So the part that is the most physically demanding, the part that most people don't like, you're digging a big trench in the woods so that the fire can't burn through. And we kind of talked about the different nuances that there are with that and the best ways to go about that. And that was the Thursday portion. And then on Friday, we went up to the Maine Forest Rangers site that they have in Old Town. And we did our pack test, which is going to be, it's 3 miles at a walking pace. Three miles in 45 minutes with 45 pounds on your back. And you have to walk it, is the requirements for that. So it's a pretty good clip that you're walking along, especially with 45 pounds on your back. But everybody was able to complete that. And then after that is when we did our burn. We did probably a quarter, half-acre burn that they have. They had a little spot in the woods that we did it. And we, like, prepped the site, dug some line around there, got the hose lays out, got those ready to go in case anything wants to go wrong. And we put some fire on the ground and started burning it. And everybody got a little bit of experience with firing devices, with drip torches, fusees. And then, we extinguished that. And kind of that was the gist of it right there.
That's cool. All right. So you said something about, did you say fusees?
Yeah. So fusees is basically just a road flare is all it is. But it burns super hot. I want to say it's over 2000 degrees that it burns. And a lot of times those are just smaller ones that people will keep in their packs in case that you run into a bad situation and you're going to have to deploy your fire shelter. You can use that to burn out fuels around you so that when a fire does reach you as you're deploying, you have less fuel to burn and the temperature will be a little bit less, a little more survivable conditions.
That makes sense. Yeah, no, that makes complete sense. You guys, you mentioned earlier about having to, that they would have the capability of bringing out portable water tanks, essentially, that you would come out and you'd be able to pump from there? Or is that something that you guys wear or haul out, or how does that work?
Yeah, so there's a couple different kinds. So there's like big portable water tanks that we have, we even have here and we utilize every once in a while.
Is that like a water buffalo type thing? Or
Bigger than that. So the one we have is 5,000 gallons.
Okay.
And it's just a foldable tank with a really thick canvas in the middle. And then you can use that to pump out of. There's also different packs that we have that are full of water that it's either a bladder or a hard tank that you can wear on your back with a spray nozzle on it.
Oh, cool.
And so those are normally around 10 gallons, give or take. And you can wear those, and that's a lot easier to hike with it on your back than carrying something around in your hands to get some water, you know, if there's water that you need a ways off in the woods.
How small would a fire in the woods have to be that something like a smaller 10-gallon tank could handle? How would that work?
So in a lot of situations, that will more so be used to chase what we call spot fires, which is when if it's really windy and the main fire is kicking up a lot of ash and just embers and stuff like that, it will go ahead of the fire, behind the fire, to the side, wherever, and start a spot fire. And a lot of times that will be utilized so that you can get to that spot fire really quickly, knock it down to the water, and then you can actually get your hand line in around it and have that completely extinguished at that point.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. When you went out west and did this stuff, was it similar to what you guys went through with training this weekend, or was it just it's kind of like an abbreviated version of that? Or
yeah, exactly. That's exactly what it is. I went out west and worked with the Forest Service for 6 months doing this. And so essentially, yeah, the initial training is all the same. It's just that was my day in, day out. That's all we did was wildfire. So you get a little bit more in depth with everything compared to what we did this weekend. But yeah, other than that, it's all the same stuff.
How many guys here were involved with the training this weekend?
So we had 14 guys this weekend.
Oh, that's cool.
Which is a really good number, because a lot of times we don't necessarily have the leadership certs to take out a full team of guys. A 20-man hand crew is a standard hand crew, but we don't necessarily have the leadership certs for that. So if we were to pair up with the Forest Rangers, you know, 14 guys would complement that pretty well in order to make a 20-man crew.
Do you guys anticipate, now that you've got this training, do you think that, you know, the main Forest Service would call on you guys for help with that type of stuff? Or not? I mean, I should be asking, like, they must be training other fire departments, like civilian entities, like maybe Bangor or Herman, I'm not sure, in the same capacity, or is it just you guys they've trained?
So a lot of times what they'll do is they'll train more of the rural, like most of the fires that we get in the state are going to be more rural fires. So they'll train with those guys a lot. They put on a couple red card classes like we did a year with local guys. But a lot of times what they'll run into there is that those guys don't have the red card training per se. So the reason they kind of wanted to do us was because then they just have another entity that they know they trained. So they know exactly what we're aware of and what we're capable of. That if they do get a bigger incident and they need more help, they're able to call upon us to go help them out with that. And they know exactly the resource that they're going to be getting. That was kind of.
We've seen like in the news before, like when there have been wildfires out west, and it seems and it sometimes can get kind of out of control, and they do kind of like an all call mm-hmm. around the nation. Could you guys be called to help out with that? And if so, would that be like in the capacity of, you know, the capacity you guys hold now, or would that be more so, I would think, like a natural disaster, National Guard type response, I would think.
Yeah, that one could go either way. And I mean, at that point, if they're going to mobilize us, you know, that goes way up the chain of command as to what the capacity that they want. But now we at least have the capability to offer that.
I guess that's what I was asking. That's cool.
Yeah.
That's really neat. So it just offers one more opportunity or with the unique situation that you guys could be put in.
Exactly.
Are other guard units doing this? Do you know of or no?
So I don't really know of many. I haven't really seen it on the East Coast. It could be happening, but I don't know. On the West Coast, it isn't uncommon to see an Army Guard unit that will be trained up and paired with a few Forest Service guys, kind of like I was just talking about with the Maine Forest Rangers, but it'd be the U.S. Forest Service guys, and they'll put together, like what I'm talking about, a 20-man hand crew. But normally that's all going to be like in-state stuff that they like California will maybe have one or two units that do that or something along those lines. But that's the only way that other way that I've seen it throughout the military would be stuff like that. Also the some Air Force units out in the Western United States have C-130s that they'll use for tanker retardant drops or water drops to help put out those fires and, you know, on the air side of things.
I think we've seen those. Like we've all kind of, those videos are unreal. Watching those, the water drop from the C-130s. Is there anything you could think of other than maybe putting out small fires on base? Like if something that were to happen, like in the woods, the minimum amount of wood terrain that we have, having that capability to put those fires out. What's the added benefit to having this training? Would it be like the cooperative agreement or the
right? Definitely. Yeah. The cooperative agreement is a good part of it. Cause similar to what we have with like City of Bangor, City of Herman and other surrounding towns, as far as a mutual aid agreement, they can call upon us to go help them with stuff and they're helping us get extra training or if we need them for whatever reason,
that's cool.
It just builds a better relationship to be able to do that. And even, I know that we have sent guys to Montenegro before, more on the CE side of things to help them out with stuff. But that's another thing that has been up in the air is possibly they have wildfires out there. They could order us up to go help them out with that and provide a service to a large group of people at that point.
Yeah, or even just the training opportunity. You guys could relay what you learned and teach it to those guys. Yeah, that's pretty cool. How is the training overall received by your fire department?
It was good.
Yeah.
Everybody was pretty excited about it. And it's something that we started last year, like I said, with all the online classes. So everybody knew kind of what it was going to entail and how it was going to go. And yeah, everybody seemed to do well with it and enjoy it. And it's nice to be able to get out of the firehouse and do things every once in a while. So it's good to go do that and build relationships with other people.
Where was the training? Did I miss that?
The first day was all here on base up at the bivouac site.
That's right.
And the second day we went out to the Forest Rangers site in Old Town.
How many instructors were there?
So there was two Forest Rangers.
Okay.
Yeah. So it was Brad Bearby was one of the Rangers. Mm-hmm. And then the other one was Ryan Burt were the two Rangers that were helping us out with that.
As far as the training goes and what you guys have learned the added benefit of having that, you know, you can add that to your tool belt type of thing.
Right.
What's next? Like, is there a plan moving forward? Like, are you guys going to relay and teach some of the other firefighters that missed the training what you guys learned, or is there like an annual refreshment requirement, or how's that work?
Yeah, there is. So yeah, you have to do it once every year. You have to do that PAC test that I mentioned, and you have to do a day long course of a little bit of hands on, a little bit of slideshow presentation style learning. But yeah, that's an annual requirement. And then, yeah, as far as where we want to go with it, is ideally we're able to, I mean, I just got done putting together a list of gear that we may need in order to be able to go out and help the community with all this stuff. So if we can get that going and figure out the logistical side of being able to get out and help people, hopefully get after it here soon, helping people out.
Is that the new gear, would that potentially replace what you guys are currently using, or was that something that would be a supplement to what you already have?
It'd be more of a supplement, yeah. Like I said, a lot of the stuff that we have is more designed as like just a quick get there, put it out, and be done with it in smaller scale fires, whereas the other stuff would be a larger scale fire with more people and more resources needed that we would have to go and utilize all that stuff.
What's next for you? Are you planning on sticking around for a while, or are you like in the guard, or?
Yeah. So yeah, I'm, like I said, I'm full time on base here for like 2.5 years now, and I have, yeah, just year and a half left on my contract, and just kind of seeing where it takes me at this point.
Yeah.
Take this and run with it, and that'll be fun, and yeah, see what the career brings.
I thought about this earlier when you came up and we were talking. I feel like, and I've mentioned this before, but like, I'll use the analogy with CE. Look at the places that I've gone with CE before. You see like all these different troops, you know, DSGs and guard members that, and then some full-timers too, kind of all come together, and there might be like 25 different ways to build a boot rack, you right. know, for like a austere environment where your boots might be all muddy at the end of the day and you don't want to get your tent or your living quarters all muddy. So we're going to build a boot rack, and there might be 25 different ways to build that boot rack. But the cool thing is everyone brings something to the table, like maybe some little nuances and some tips and tricks they've learned over the years in the civilian sector or on the military sector, yeah. in the military side, and kind of come together in meeting of the minds and figure out the best way to do that. On the active duty side, you don't really get that. Like it's a very hard and fast, like this is the way the Air Force teaches it. This is how we're going to do it.
Yep.
But on the guard side, it's a little bit different. Same thing with the cops, right? There might be 15 different ways to handcuff somebody and detain somebody. And so you might have the state police, you know, a state police officer that's there that's also a guard member. You might have a sheriff's deputy, or you might have a Bangor PD, you know, patrolman, or you might have a kid that's straight out of Air Force Security Forces Tech School, and he's teaching the way how the Air Force wants you to do it. Right. But that's kind of the beauty of the guard, is that there's a bunch of different ways to do things. And I'm sure it's similar with the fire department. You know, you mentioned you had experience going out west and doing this stuff and learning how to do this stuff. But how many people can actually say they've done that and worked with the Forest Service out west on how to put out forest fires? Right. You know, probably not many.
Right.
You know,
it's definitely a unique melting pot at the fire department, where like I have that sort of background. And then we have we have guys that are on Bangor City Fire, guys that are kind of spread all over the state, honestly, on different fire departments that will all specialize in different things. We have some guys that are really good at like technical rescue, rope rescue stuff, that come in and on a drill weekend are able to bring that sort of training to help us out. And other guys that are always going to structure fires and have different insights and methods of stuff that they might do that. So for sure, that's something that gets utilized a lot, is different people from different backgrounds. And it helps us out a ton at the fire department.
Have you enjoyed your time with the fire department so far?
I have, yeah. Yeah. Really great group of guys. That's one of the biggest things about it. Like we were saying, is such a tight-knit group that they're fun to be around. And the job itself is good too. I don't ever see myself sitting behind a desk and typing away all day. So that gives me a way to get out and get hands-on and have to think on my feet and go through that whole process. And yeah, it's a good time.
Somebody was saying the other day, we did a tour, we were doing a school tour, and we brought us down to the fire department. We were down there, and they were telling the kids that were on the tour that the fire pole that you guys have down there is one of the last fire poles at a Air Force installation worldwide, because they're not designing fire stations like that anymore. Yeah. It's all one floor.
Yep.
That's pretty crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely a unique thing that we have going on. It's one of the taller ones that's around as well, so
it's tall. I looked down that hole, I'm like, man, that would hurt.
Yeah,
you'd fall down that thing.
Yeah. First time I went down, it was a little nerve-wracking. Yeah. But you get used to it.
Yeah, I can only imagine if it's somebody who has fear of heights.
Right.
Yeah, no thanks. So, it, you know, with a lot of trainings and stuff that we offer, or that, that even civilian entities offer, there, there could be a follow-up training. There could be like a tier two version of that training. Is this like this, the firefighting, the red card? That's what you called it.
Yep.
Is this red card like a one and done, or is it like, is there a more advanced version of it you guys could potentially learn down the road that you know of? Or?
So Wildland Fire is kind of unique in the way that they do their trainings, whereas everything that we do through the Air Force, the fire department, is it's a certification, and you do the course and you take the class and you have the certification. There's a practical test that you have to take, but after that, that's kind of it. With Wildland Firefighting, yes, you have to take the course, take the class, and go through that whole process, but you get what's called a task book. And that task book can have, it takes most guys a full fire season to get through a task book. So, what we got is called firefighter type two. The next task book that a lot of people open is firefighter type one, which starts to bring you more into that leadership role. And also incident commander type five, which is for the smallest, most simple, non-complex incidents. And that's something that through the forest rangers, we'd be able to open a task book and start to work on, you know, firefighter type one, ICT-5. Another thing that we could take is when you're cutting fire line, it's not just the guys digging. You have to have saws out in front running and cutting down trees or whatever else, you know, could potentially burn. So there's been talks of potentially a saw class in the future to get guys certified with that.
That's awesome.
The forest rangers up there, they run Huey helicopters. And so there's another task book for that. It's a helicopter crew member. I mean, there's a million different ways that, cool. that you can go with it and different trainings that you could take. And then, like you said as well, take those trainings, be able to offer them out to other agencies.
That's cool. Well, hopefully they'll offer those to you guys and you guys could get kind of certified on those too. Cause that's just one more thing, one more bullet you can add and to your resume and certifications and stuff. That's super cool.
Right.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome, man. Is there anything you want to add? Anything you can think of that we didn't talk about?
I feel like we covered most of it.
Mm-hmm.
I can't think of anything off the top of my head right now.
Yeah. What would you say to a young kid who's contemplating coming into to joining not just the Guard, but maybe the fire department? Is it a positive experience?
It's definitely a positive experience. Mm-hmm. Going through the DoD Fire Academy is some of the best training that you can get as well. Whether you're looking to make a full-time career here or get hired somewhere else or whatever your plan is with that, it's great training that you get through there. And just the military in general, it's a great, great place to be. And definitely highly recommend that. Yeah.
Good, man. Well, I appreciate it. I really do. I know it's 3:00 on a Sunday, 3:30 on a Sunday. But I appreciate you coming in to do this conversation.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me. All right.
Thanks. A shout out to Staff Sergeant Blaine Clark for agreeing to do this podcast. He's got a good head on his shoulders, and he's going to go far, no matter what he does. He and I talked about it during our conversation, but not a lot of people know that our fire department has mutual aid agreements with our local communities. They're always being called on for help, and of course, they do what they can. This red card training allows them to amplify that capability. It's pretty awesome. Now here's my recruiting pitch. If you or someone you know might be interested in our fire department, don't hesitate to give it a shot. They're a great group of maniacs full of people like Sergeant Clark, loaded with experience and skill. Don't hesitate. Drill weekend is here, so let's make the most of it, and I hope that you're all having a great summer. I'm Senior Master Sergeant Andy Sinclair with the 101st Air Refueling Wing Public Affairs Office. And this is the Maniac Radio Show. Take care of yourselves and take care of each other. So long.